never filtered, always fun.
I'll tell you what, I got a Range Rover and there is a perfect little pocket where the gear shifter is, where a little thing of nug sauce fits in perfectly.
Almost like it was built for you. It's like a custom ride.
Yeah, I just go nug to the sauce, like seamless.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Well, this is a rarity. I don't remember the last time I was in a situation like this where both the O-Dog and Noodles are off between the months of September and June. And July and August, they're off all the time, freeloading. But Craig Button's in here because the O-Dog is in Ottawa tonight, I presume riding the bull again.
Hey, listen, if you're an Ottawa Senators fan, first of all, Jeff predicted that they'd win big in Game 3, right? He rode the bull before that game, right? If you're an Ottawa Senators fan, you're dragging Jeff onto that bull.
Here's a question for you right off the hop. What do you think Eugene Melnyk would prefer? The O-Dog predicts a win tonight, and they actually win the game, or the O-Dog buys up all of the remaining tickets that are available for the game? What do you think Melnyk would prefer?
I think he would. That's a great question. That really is a good question. Is that a poll question?
I think we might have to fire that poll
up. That
might
be a poll question. I would think that he would want a full building.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think so, too, because he might be thinking, you know what, we'll probably lose Game 7 anyway. Give me the sellout tonight.
Yeah.
Give me the sellout, because this is too big of a story for the biggest game in the country. Like, this is Canada's team. They claim they're Canada's team, and they've got the flags on the back of the helmets, and it's very cute, yet
you know,
they can't sell out the building.
You know, since they put the flags on the back of the helmets, they're 0-2.
And ugly form, too.
They might want to consider taking the flags off.
Maybe try to be someone else's
team. Yeah, maybe put them at half mast.
Yes, I think so, because it got ugly over the weekend quickly.
10-2 out there, outscored in two games.
Mm-hmm. But I don't get it. I don't know the region. I can't pretend to. I'm not from Ottawa. I've never lived in Ottawa. And I'm not here to take a run at all the hockey fans out there, but I just don't get it. I don't understand how Game 6 at home, with Crosby in your building in the Eastern Conference Final, you allow this to even become a story. How does it get to a point where all of these tickets are available? I'm jealous. I'm jealous that they have a game to go to tonight. I would love to purchase tickets to walk into the ACC tonight.
And I think we have to be careful in trying to, I'm like you, Brian, you know, we know that it's a government town, but, you know, there's lots of people that have been there their entire lives. And, you know, we know there's lots of Senators fans there, but I don't know, you know, what the economy has done locally, you know, where people's mood is at about the team. I don't know, but you know, it becomes a story. Just like when Anaheim, you remember the first game in Anaheim, that 6 o'clock game, and there was empty seats and everybody, oh yeah, why is there hockey in Anaheim? Well, you know, it's too easy to just take a run at it based on empty seats. You know, there's got to be a reason.
There has to be
good,
something.
Valid reason.
There has to be. And I know where the rink is in Kanata. It's way outside of downtown, and they're moving in the next couple of years, I believe.
Yeah, they want to get a building.
They want to get a new building right downtown, which seems ideal and probably should have been there for the past two decades. But this has got to be a little bit concerning that even when you move downtown, yeah, you'll probably sell out the playoff games, but can you sell out a game in October or November when Minnesota is in town? I don't know. Like, that would be a bit concerning to me. That, yeah, okay, 40 minutes outside of the city, but Game 6, Eastern Conference Final, Crosby, Malkin, Phil, et cetera. How do I sell out during the regular season, even if we are downtown?
Well, that, you know, you think about downtown, too. What I always think about is after work, people going to eat and people going out, and then they're going, okay, yeah, we'll go out, grab dinner, we'll grab a drink, and then we're going to go to the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't – my idea of Ottawa is that's not how it works. You know, it's people that are in and out, and wherever they're working, they're in and out. There's not really – a downtown. I mean, there's a downtown, you know what I mean, but there's not like that's going to...
People don't congregate in the same area all the time. Like, you go downtown Toronto at 5:30 any day, you know where people are going to be.
Well, the restaurants
and it's around the ACC, to be honest, in the Dome. I mean, they're all kind of in the same region. You're down on Front, maybe on King, maybe on Queen, but for the most part, you're all in the same region.
Well, it's really interesting, too, and you just try to put it into some... Being in Edmonton, and over the years, I mean, that team struggled, we know. the rink wasn't closed. It wasn't easy to get to Rexall, and it was filled.
Mm-hmm.
And now downtown, they're revitalizing that, and you know it's going to be a, I mean it's already a real great spot, and it's going to even get that much better as they build up things around it. So, I mean, is there a deeper passion for the Oilers in Edmonton than there is for the Senators in Ottawa?
I think there probably is. I think that seems pretty clear, and I think it says something. And maybe it makes us take a step back as Canadians, because generally we can be so arrogant about how it's our game and we support it better than anyone else, when at this point, Nashville appears to be the best hockey market going. The way that they're packing that building, and the way that not only the people in the building are coming around and supporting that team, it feels like the whole city, the whole region, the whole state is kind of jumping on board. I was reading something today that Nashville, like they are full fledged Preds fans. Like, they are fully on board. Now, again, this is convenient because they're in a cup final. So it's easy to get behind a team when you've been following them the way that they've been playing and how entertaining they've been playing. I don't know if this will be the case. I don't know if it'll carry over. You know, we've had examples of this situation in Toronto where people get so amped up about what's happening in the moment. And they say, oh, it's definitely going to carry over. TFC is the most recent example. TFC goes all the way to the MLS Cup. They beat Montreal in the semis. Goes to a shootout or a penalty kicks in the final against Seattle. 1.5 million people watching on TV. Tickets are sold out immediately for big prices. And then they started their season again just recently, and no one's really talking about it outside of the diehards who were there anyway.
Right, and they are there. They're there anyway. It wasn't good.
Exactly. And the same thing in Nashville. There have been diehard Preds fans there for a long time. But how do you engage the Fairweather fans, and how do you continue to keep them aboard? I mean, it's easier said than done. When you're in the moment, it's easy to say, look at us. This is a great hockey town. Look at this market. If the Preds miss the playoffs next year, or for whatever reason take a turn for the worse for 3 or 4 years, will it still be a hockey town? I'm not convinced that it will be. But in the moment, man, it's rocking down there, and full credit to them.
Yeah, and it is rocking. I remember, I forget what year it was, Brian, and 10 years ago, I was in there for a playoff stretch. They were playing Detroit in the playoffs, and I was in there. And it was, I mean, when they talk about it being Smashville and it being loud, it was loud. I remember being in there just going, wow. And the way it's set up in there, it's just conducive to the crowd. You hear lots about the older arenas. And like how you felt like the crowd was right on top. That's how it feels like in Nashville. And I think if you ask the players, they'll tell you that as well. And it is loud. And I mean, I think it's phenomenal. And it was funny. I was thinking about this last night. I was thinking about David Poile, who's been a manager in the National Hockey League for 35 years. But I was thinking about Bill Foley's comments about Las Vegas winning a Stanley Cup in 6 years. And I'm thinking, you know, David Poile had some top-notch teams, some excellent teams that were certainly Stanley Cup contenders in Washington and some good teams in Nashville. But going to Nashville, 1998, here they are, 19 years later from the time they started, 19 years later from when they started, here they are in their first Stanley Cup. And I just think about the comment by Bill Foley in Las Vegas. It's like, you better be careful.
Be very careful. And it's really dangerous to sell your fan base on that, too.
Oh, I know.
A fan base that is eating up everything right now. In Vegas, if you're a hockey fan or a sports fan, you're eating it up. I was talking to someone over the weekend who had been down there a couple of times recently, and he said, everyone's buzzing about this team coming. Like, they're very proud in Vegas that they're finally getting that recognition on a national stage, because in the States, and in many ways up here, if you don't have a pro team, you're not on the map. Right, like, and I understand that was why the Bills leaving Buffalo was such a sensitive topic down there, because it wasn't only about loving that team. It was also about, if you don't have an NFL team in the States, unless you're LA, and it's a very rare situation, you're just not, it's like you're not a real city. You're not considered, you know, a part of the big boys to an extent. And I think Vegas, my impression is, they've been crying out for this for a while. Like, no, we can support it. We're the real deal. We're more than just the Strip. And they're really, really excited. So you could probably sell them anything. And in a way, you're playing with their emotions, being like, no, we think we can win a cup in 5 or 6 years. Now, maybe they get crazy lucky and everything falls into plan and everything falls into place and everything works out, but I don't like their chances. I think they're going to be awful for years.
Yeah, but it's just a reminder. I think that it was a reminder to – and you know, George McPhee's a very experienced general manager. I mean, he goes in with that. But, I mean, David Poile was real sharp. And you think about it. I think about Atlanta moving to Winnipeg. 6 years later, they're Winnipeg. They made the playoffs once in 6 years
and got swept.
And they had a team. Like they had a team. Like, I mean, what Las Vegas is starting with is bare bones.
Scratch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
scratch.
I just I just was thinking about that, and I think, you know, everybody's working to try to get to that point, and that's what you're trying to build to. And it just, you think about it, I'm going, geez, you know, 6 years, eh? Okay.
You're asking for a lot, man. And you're putting pressure on people that you're paying a lot of money to. I mean, George McPhee understands what comes with the gig. He's been in the league for a long time, but I'm sure he's thinking, can you just give me some time? Give me some time here to try to get going. I'm not sure they're going to make the playoffs in six years.
Yeah. Well, that's why I go back to Winnipeg. 5 out of 6 years, they've missed the playoffs.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of good teams out there. They have some good players.
Yep. Well, it's true. And the thing is about Nashville, like, it's not like they've won the cup yet. This is further than they've ever been, but there's no guarantees they win a Stanley Cup.
Well,
they
this
feel
is San
good
Jose
about
last
themselves
year, isn't
right
it?
Now.
Isn't it San Jose right now?
Exactly.
It's no different than San Jose last year.
Yeah. So hold off on the celebrations about what's happened there. And the whole PK Subban stuff, I'm fascinated with it. I love these kind of stories. I love that trade. I think this should be proof league-wide that making blockbuster deals can work, can help your team, can revitalize a room, revitalize a marketplace. But everyone's focused on Subban. You know who I want to talk to right now? Is Shea Weber. That's who I'd like to interview. I'd like to get some truth serum in Shea Weber, because he was a guy, I've made this case before, and I don't think it's far-fetched. In fact, I'd be willing to lock this hot take in. He is the greatest Nashville Predator in the history of the franchise.
Well, I can't dispute
who
that.
Who else would come to mind other than Shea Weber? Captain for that long, great player, Norris candidate. A beast, and was the leader. And when he left, it's, you know, you heard rumors that the players weren't ecstatic about it because he was kind of the glue guy for obvious reasons. And he goes on to Montreal, and they had a good year, but it kind of sputtered towards the end, and they get knocked out in the first round. And here's Nashville in a cup final.
Oh.
And everyone's focused on that hockey market, a hockey market that he helped build in many ways.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, he was. I can't disagree with you. And I want to come back to the blockbuster trade because I have a different comment I want to make about something I had said earlier. But, you know, you think about David Poile, blockbuster trade to get Ryan Johansson.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he traded a real top defenseman, but he needed a number one center. So that's the price to get a number one center. You know, making the big trade for, obviously, PK's big. But he made a heck of a trade in getting Philip Forsberg. He said, you know what, this is a good young player. And you look at what Forsberg's doing here. And, I mean, a team in Washington, you know, that said, oh, Martin Erat's going to help us now. And it's an example about patience and where teams think that where they might be closer and they're not. And, you know, he made a trade for James Neal.
Right.
You know, the Patrick Hornquist. You know, Patrick Hornquist has gone on to Pittsburgh and won a Stanley Cup, so that's worked out really well for Pittsburgh. But, you know, David Poile is, you know, you think about Ryan Johansson, James Neal.
Mike Fisher.
But Philip Forsberg and now PK Subban. Those are like four significant players
Monsters.
On this team.
Monsters
so
on
back
your team.
To the blockbuster trade. So do you want me to tell you what I was going to say?
Yeah, go ahead.
You'll recall, I don't know how long ago it was, maybe 3 months ago, and we were talking about William Nylander.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd said, well, you know, he's a heck of a player. And if they ever wanted to consider, I said, in a moment, I said, well, I'm not sure if he's part of the long-term core of the team. But I said, if you're going to trade him, he's a hell of a player to trade for a top pair defenseman. Well, I'm going to say this right now. Brendan Shanahan got traded for Chris Pronger. And to me, watching William Nylander now, I'm revising that. It's not a top pair defenseman. You better get a number one defenseman if you're trading William.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely on board with that.
So you watch him. And I mean, I'm not just saying, he was terrific at the World Championships, but it was more the Washington series that really kind of, I mean, the season was great, but that Washington series, I watch him more and more, and I'm just thinking, yeah, you can trade him. But it better be for a Shanahan Pronger type deal, a top defense. He is so much better than Taylor Hall. It's frightening.
I'm absolutely on board with that, Craig. That was the argument. I remember we had a heated conversation about it at that point. I wasn't
suggesting trade him. I was saying if you're going to trade him, you better. But sorry, it's not about a top pair defenseman
I'm
or a
you.
Top three. You better get an elite number one, like a top defenseman.
Well, I remember we were talking about Anaheim at that time. Now, it's a bit of a different story now because we've seen Brandon Montour a little bit, and I think he's got the potential to be a pretty good player. but I'd want more than that. And I remember at the time people were suggesting, and it wasn't you, but other, it was just kind of in the in the air, like this is what. And I remember someone saying, well, maybe they could get Montour for Nylander. And I said at the time, are you crazy? Yeah. That kid's in the American Hockey League. This kid's on his way to 60-plus points as a 20-year-old, and now he goes to the Worlds and wins the MVP of the whole tournament, and there's some superstar talent over there. Now, what I would say about the overreaction to the World Championships in particular, a three-week tournament is not going to change the way Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan feel about him or what he's going to do. Like, you've seen a lot of people talk, is he untouchable now? No, he would be untouchable based on what they think he is to the Maple Leafs, not Team Sweden for 3 weeks.
Totally agree.
He had a great tournament, and he was a blast to watch, and I loved him before I got there. I love him just as much now. He's a great young talent, and I think he's a huge part of the product here, but I'm with you. Like, William Nylander, especially if they believe, and the rest of the league believes, eventually he could transfer to the middle of the ice.
But when's that going to happen?
I don't know.
Mike Babcock said no.
He said not this year.
Yeah, well,
he
they said asked not this year. Well, he said no. I think he said no. They asked him if he would be playing center next year, and he said no.
Yeah, no this year. Now, I don't think
did he say this year, or did he just say no?
No, I think he left the door open to down the road.
Okay.
My guess would be if they're sitting in there with the blackboard or the whiteboard or whatever, Bozak's deal expires, and then they think a year down the road, Nylander potentially moves to the ice. But he did shut it down next year.
What about Kadri?
Well, I hear you. I don't know. Kadri maybe he's your third-line center.
Well, wait a second. Kadri had 30 goals this year.
I understand that.
Now, I watched Nylander play with Backstrom, a center, and I think that Nylander could do the same things with Matthews.
I'd pair him with Matthews for the next 10 years.
Yeah, that's what I would
do. That's exactly what I would do. All right, let's go to
But I wanted to just say that, though, because you watch him and, like, you know, just revising, you better get a stud. You better get a top stud young defenseman.
That's what you're
if you're trading him. That's
like,
what,
you're talking, I think, Johansson for Jones type deal.
Oh, yeah, you're Shanahan for Pronger.
Right.
And remember, when they traded, when St. Louis traded Shanahan, Chris Pronger talks about this, right? He said he got booed for his first entire year in St. Louis because they hated the trade.
And they love Shanahan so much.
And we all know what Pronger came. But that's what you got to be looking at.
I'm with you. All right, the O-Dog is on assignment in Ottawa. He's on the phone. How's it going out there?
What are you saying, fellas? You guys arguing a lot today,
see? No, actually, Craig just dropped a bombshell about how he values William Nylander. And just not only based on the World Championships, but he said more so those six games against Washington. Everyone's buzzing about Nylander right now, but Craig said if you're even thinking about making a deal, it's got to be stud for stud. How do you feel about that?
Well, why would you trade a stud for anything less than a stud?
Right.
I mean, that's kind of I don't know if that's what Craig was meaning, but I mean, the big thing about William Nylander, and you think this about young players, is can he compete in the playoffs? You know, my assessment of him started back when he played in the World Juniors. I believe it was in Toronto a few years ago, and I was like, man, this guy looks soft. He looks inconsistent. And I think that's where, you know, you talk about Mike Babcock having the ability to coach somebody up and making them understand what they have to do to be successful. I believe that's what he's done with Nylander. He's basically told him, if you're the hardest working guy on the ice, you are going to be a hell of a player, and you're going to do all the things you want. You're going to score goals. You're going to make a lot of money, and he is a stud right now.
Yeah, and Jeff, if you recall, I think you were in that day. I said, like, you know, you might consider trading. Like, you know, you have a really good player for a top pair defenseman. And after watching him against Washington, and the World Championships, he was brilliant. But I've just said it's stud for stud. If you're trading, it's the Shanahan for Chris Pronger trade. That's what it is.
I was in Hartford the day we made that trade, and although, Craig, it's almost like the currency for a good defenseman now. I think everybody thought that Taylor Hall was a superstar going for just a good player, and maybe that's what you have to do nowadays. You want a really good defenseman? It's not just a really good forward. It's a really good player, a stud like William Nylander that'll get you defenseman, because I think you're seeing last night with the Nashville Predators how – you know, how Kia, I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins might be a different story with a patchwork D, but they have Sid and Malkin up front. If you have that mobile kind of puck-moving guys that can possess the puck and make plays, it's a dangerous combination.
Game 6 tonight in Ottawa, Sens Pens. You can hear the game right here on TSN 1050. The O-Dog is in Ottawa. What's the biggest story in the city? You've only been there for a while, but is it the actual game or the amount of tickets that are still available?
There is some chitter chatter about how could there possibly be empty seats, and We were talking about it on the way up, Ryan. It's like there's two different theories. I mean, what is it? Is it, if you're spending money, you've already been to a bunch of these games during this run, or is it the way they lost the last game? I mean, if you lived in Ottawa, if they got spanked the way they did in Pittsburgh, would it change your mind on attending or not?
I wouldn't. No, I mean, it's still, they can win tonight and still win the series.
So, yeah, that's where I kind of, if you're a diehard, that should be your mindset, right? It's like, let's just go try to win this one, and then who the hell knows what's going to happen in a game seven, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, yeah, it was an ugly game. It was a bad game, but you're still only down 3-2, or you're in it.
You know what? You can talk about the run or the cost of tickets or, you know, the size of the building. It all comes back to the same thing. This arena is basically in Winnipeg, and that's the problem, right?
Well, that's what the owner, I'm sure, is going to say. But I do wonder if Eugene Melnyk and the way the fans feel about him kind of factor into their overall impression of the team. And I'm not sure that necessarily helps him. But regardless, I mean, they got a chance tonight. I don't love their chances because it kind of feels like either Pittsburgh has figured them out or Guy Boucher and his constant rants about how big of underdogs they are has finally sunk in, and this team's like, yeah, you're right, we can't beat them.
You know what? I didn't like the comments the other game.
No.
Like, if you want to come out and say, you know what, we have to play way better if we want to give our team a chance to win. But for him to come out and say, everybody knows they're a better team than us, I'm like, if I was a player, I'd be like, sorry, guy, you lost me. Or sorry, Guy, you lost me.
Hey, Jeff, I couldn't agree with you more. I thought it was such a dumb comment.
It's just a stupid comment, Craig. I mean, Manu Ginobili talked the other day in the San Antonio Golden State series, and he was like, for us to win, we have to play at a 10 and hope that Golden State plays at a 7. If you want to go that route, it's understandable. It's the truth. But for the coach just to come out and say, we all know they're a better team. If I was a player, I would just be like, whatever, Guy. Whatever, guy.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm with you. Let's hear what Boucher said.
Hey, Brian, before you go to Boucher,
yeah,
I'll give that one a no-gi.
We know they're a better team. Everybody knows that on the planet. They're the Stanley Cup champions, are the best team in the league. So, I mean, that's no secret. So we know that to beat that team, we need to be at our very, very best. We were not.
He's just been doing it the whole time. Like, I think it worked for him. I'll give him credit. It worked for him in the first round, even the second round to an extent. But, yeah, at some point you got to take a different route to trying to inspire. I mean,
Pittsburgh made a massive adjustment before game four. They said, we're terrible in our own zone. So we got to spend less time in our own zone. And they started to – they changed or made an adjustment where they defended in front of the red line. And they had their high forward coming back. And so what did Ottawa do? They didn't make the necessary adjustment. Like, so you can sit here and play the stupid underdog card, which I call the stupid underdog card. I don't buy into it. I never have. Okay? And Guy Boucher hasn't made an adjustment. He's become passive with his team, and his team is getting it taken to him the last two games. So when you think about game three, putting pressure on and trying. So now you got to think about a different way. Chip the puck back up behind those defensemen and make the forwards chase you back defensively. He hasn't made an adjustment. So he can talk about the players. Guy Boucher better be better.
Right. I'm with you. Well, we'll leave it there.
I'm worked up, Jeff.
Yes, I love it, man. This is beautiful. We got another 2.5 hours to keep putting quarters in Craig. Does Duthie have you doing Chris Farley things again or what?
Pretty much. There's a giant ketchup bottle on the rink, like on the boards. And he decided it would be funny if I went and lied underneath the ketchup bottle and acted like I was drinking the ketchup. And then he posted, is there ketchup on that, on the Instagram picture.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. This one will haunt you.
Really?
Yeah, this one's going to stick around for a while, I think.
For what particular reason would that be?
I don't know. There's some sexual connotations, and it's kind of awkward, and... It's a weird pick.
It kind of looks like I'm on a massage table.
Yeah, I know, but you're on the ice and there's ketchup dripping all over your face.
I got to go, bud.
All right, man. Enjoy it.
See ya.
Later. There's the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. All right, Scotty Mack will join us in studio. Aaron Sanchez back to the DL for the third time. And now people are throwing out the idea that maybe if these blisters slash laceration issues on his throwing hand continue to persist. Should he end up in the bullpen at some point this year? I'll give you my take on that. We'll get Scotty Mac in on it as well. We'll get to that next. All right, Ray Ferraro will join us just after 5 p.m. Big NBA game tonight. I'm expecting LeBron James to go legend tonight, and the Boston Celtics will pay for what they did to him a couple of nights ago. How dare they hold the king to only 11 points and win a miracle game on a miracle shot? How dare they do that? So we'll tee that game up as well. We'll get Scotty Mack in here. Jose Bautista starting at third base tonight, and Aaron Sanchez back to the DL. That more with Scotty Mack in studio in 2 minutes. How many people in Toronto actually know who is leading the NL Central right now? I would say very few. I know, Scotty Mack, you're probably aware of this because you track that division, not only professionally, but from a personal standpoint.
Yeah, more from a personal.
More from a personal standpoint. But the Milwaukee Brewers are leading the NL Central. What is going on there?
Yeah, well, I'm only on for a half hour, Hayes, and I don't think you're bringing me on to talk about all my complaints with the hungover from their world championship Chicago Cubs, so I'm not going to do that. But did you know, as I divert the conversation, that the Cubs, like 45 games into the season, have allowed more first-inning runs this season than there have been first innings? Their ERA in the first inning is more than nine.
Really?
So they're playing from behind almost every day, and that's why they're in third place. And I got to be nice to them. Like, if you're 22-23 and you just won the first World Series in franchise history in 100, or not franchise history, but in 108 years, I think you're probably the king of the town, and you might be celebrating still. Like, you know?
I think 108 years is franchise history.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah.
In our lives, yeah.
I mean, once you get to 100, I mean, yeah. You know, every year above it doesn't.
Gertie, there might be Gertie hanging out in the old folks' home who might remember the last one. Might. But there's only one Gertie.
Yeah, see, I'm not concerned about the Cubs, though. Like, Craig and I were talking about this earlier. I see them running off a crazy 30, 40 game stretch, and they'll take off. I think they'll probably run away with the division. Boston, on the other hand, because the Red Sox are the Cubs of the American League, essentially, in terms of expectations, in terms of what they figured could happen this year, Boston's in a very different spot because Boston's only a game over 500, and they're chasing the Yankees, chasing Baltimore. Now Ken Rosenthal reporting that John Farrell could be in trouble, and I would suggest if there's enough smoke, there will be fire soon. I wouldn't be shocked if Farrell was gone by the end of June, the way things are humming there. And if players in that dugout and in that clubhouse don't believe he has their back, and specifically Pedroia, let's be honest. I mean, he's the guy that kind of makes everything work there. I think he's toast.
Well, he had it out with Pomerantz in the dugout in Oakland on the weekend. And I think the big thing to remember, Craig knows this from his management days in the NHL, it doesn't always work out this way. Like Masai Ujiri, Dwayne Casey is an example of it going the other way. But John Farrell is not Dave Dombrowski's guy. Dave Dombrowski, when he came in as president of baseball ops of the Boston Red Sox, inherited John Farrell, who was hired by Ben Sherrington. And so Dombrowski still got that one card to play, right? He can get his guy in there. And somebody who was widely considered as a really bright managerial candidate was a coaching member of Farrell's staff here in Toronto and then went with him to Boston and is now doing a great job in his early days with Arizona, Torrey Lovello. So that's one that maybe got away for Boston. But yeah, Farrell gets fired here. It'll be real interesting to see what direction they go.
Well, he's got to hire Jim Leland.
Imagine he brought Leland out, cigarettes and all.
Oh, that's the best.
I would love to see that.
Let me tell you, because the first year I covered the Jays was 2013, which was Leland's last year managing the Tigers. And so I'd go over every now and then to the visiting team's clubhouse before a game and you know, talk to a player or two or whatever I felt I needed to do on a given day. And so you'd walk from the clubhouse through the first base dugout to get out onto the field. And there would be, right at the top of the steps leading down to the dugout from the clubhouse, a stash of about 9 or 10 extinguished darts.
Mm-hmm.
just in a little pile, neatly organized. The ashes, it's like the Jim Leland Memorial.
Hey, man, he's coming off a big WBC title. He's humming. I think Jim Leland would be great for Boston. All right, so why are we, like, I get where we're at with Aaron Sanchez, third time on the DL, same finger, different descriptions in terms of injuries, but ultimately his season has been thrown completely out of whack.
Yeah.
And it's disappointing because the two faces of each respective, you know, position have had their seasons derailed. Donaldson was supposed to be the face of the bat, Sanchez the face of the staff, and neither of whom have been able to really bring anything to the team because of the injuries. Donaldson expected to return at some point, but we'll see what he can bring once he gets back. But now there's chatter that because of these injuries, Sanchez should be an option for the bullpen at some point. I can't wrap my head around that. I don't get that. Unless you feel like, I would rather, honestly, he sits out long term and gets back to like 100% form, even if it's a month, 2 months, and returns and continues down this path of being a starter. Because this is not a guy who's a middle-of-the-rotation type that maybe at some point you would think, okay, he's teetering on the roster. Do we move him back and forth? This is your ace. This is the guy who you believe is going to be the face of your staff, hopefully for the next decade. I'm not throwing a rhythm off because of some injury problems the first month of that month and a half of the season. I don't get the whole idea of even contemplating bullpen position right now. Where do you stand on this?
Well, what happened was, is I made a mess of things on your show yesterday when I filled in for you, Hayes, because I had Dirk Hayhurst on, and in the middle of an answer about Sanchez, he said, if this thing is something that keeps cropping up about 50 pitches into each appearance, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I thought, this is going to sound really crazy, but I'm going to ask this question. I mean, if you feel like this is something that's happening 40, 50 or so pitches into each appearance, well, why not throw him back down there in the bullpen if you work off the assumption that Jay Happ eventually gets back? Liriano is probably much closer than Happ. If you like what Biagini's doing, you already have Stroman and Estrada. And Dirk didn't shoot it down, and then the guys in the morning picked it up today. It was more a theory than anything, although I'll say I agree with you. I think the way it plays out is what you just laid out, which is they now have to sit him until that finger looks pristine. Mm-hmm. And we have to, if we're presuming, of course, that we're Blue Jays fans, we have to live with the idea that this could be a month, that this could be post All-Star break, if that's what it takes. The complicating factor with that is Sanchez is supposedly the best of the strength of this team, which is the starting rotation. And if they're missing 40 to 60% of that starting rotation over a long period of time, their record really isn't going to improve by very much. And so then you get into July and you have to start to make decisions leading up to the trade deadline. So you're running into this injury issue. Sanchez a big part of that, with this sort of quasi-deadline, which is the July 31st non-waiver trade deadline, that's a lot closer than it feels now, just a little more than 2 months away.
But if you're a Jays fan, the bottom line is he's hurt. He's not capable of going out and being any kind of a starter. He can't contribute. So now the first thing has to be getting him healthy. And speeding him up to try to put him out there, if he's not healthy, isn't going to help anything. So to me, there's only one course of action. Until he's close to 100%, if not 100%, he's not available. Put him on the back burner and, like, see ya. Well, when you're 100% or near it, that's when you come back and play. End of story.
Right, but twice, Craig.
No, I know.
It hasn't been that way. They've fast-tracked here, quite clearly.
Well, okay, so
well, they've
all
done
I'm
that
saying
multiple
is,
times
but
with
I'm just
multiple
stop
players.
It. Yeah. Stop it, because you're not helping anything.
No, you're not. And I also don't know. I'm not sure how scientifically you could get to a point where you say at 50 innings, that's when the blister pops up. So I'm not sure if you could find that reasoning either.
Well, 50 pitches in 50, an appearance.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But, you know, just because it's happened once or twice, I don't think that that's necessarily enough data to suggest it's going to happen the rest of the year. But I do think this is a situation with Sanchez where, and the idea of moving him to the bullpen, the record of the team probably does factor in. I think if they are in first place and humming along and they feel like, uh-oh, we don't know if we can get enough out of him as a starter, but, man, we could use the innings out of the bullpen because we're a winning team, maybe that contemplation pops into your mind. But this season appears to be lost. Not officially there yet, but they just simply have not been able to chip away at that start. I mean, they started 2-11. They played 35 games since, and they're two games over 500. They've made up ground on two games in terms of them being nine games under 500. Now they're only seven games. So I do think the standings likely factor in to what you end up doing here with Sanchez. And I also think there's a part of me that looks back on last year's decision to limit the innings and be overly cautious and suggest that that's probably never the right move because you can't control the future. You can't control the future, and you've got to take advantage of a horse when a horse is healthy, because them limiting his innings had nothing to do with blisters on his middle finger. And now you here you are a year later, and how are you supposed to predict that this guy would be in the situation that he's in?
You can't
predict. You can't.
Right, you can't.
You can't bubble wrap. You can't predict. You can't know. And anything can pop up. And it's too bad because Sanchez, a lot of people were thinking this guy was going to win a Cy Young this
year. And let's also not forget that a blister, if you're trying to compensate in any way, pitching with a blister, you can get out of your mechanic. And if your arm angle is affected in any way or anything, all of a sudden, like, geez, you know, my shoulder starts barking or other issue. Like, this can lead to bigger things. So, you know, every now and then hockey fans will say, well, come on, get out there and pitch with a blister. It is serious stuff, and it affects a guy's not just his ability to grip the baseball, but it can affect even more.
It's a great point. Like, this is where you limit innings. This is where you're overly cautious. Not when he's 100% healthy and humming. Well, this is when you concern yourself about problems.
I can only tell you this. If you got to go in for plastic surgery or heart surgery or something, and the surgeon has a blister and he can't really use his finger very well, I don't think you want him cutting
good
into
point.
You, okay? Like, you know what? And you don't want them coming out of the bullpen to trying to tie it up, even if it's for an inning. Like, right. That finger isn't. I mean, his hands are his
livelihood.
Tools.
And
that's why I said, Brian, just it's not about like what you do in terms of what managing them after. It's about the injury now. And to me, get them healthy.
Scotty Mack in studio. We'll get back into the Jays. Jose Bautista at third base tonight. What does Scotty think of that? And when can we expect Donaldson and Tulowitzki to rejoin the team? The Jays are in Milwaukee tonight. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. Ray is back in North America. He's back in Overdrive in about 10 minutes. Scotty Mack in here from the Scott MacArthur Show, 1 to 4, Monday through Friday here on TSN 1050. Jose Bautista starting at third for the first time, I believe, since 2013. Much like Russell Martin a couple of weeks ago, or about a week and a half ago, when the same thing happened with him. What do you make of this?
Well, I'm looking at the lineup. So they've got Carrera batting second, playing right. Bautista playing third and hitting third. And they've got Coughlin playing left and hitting seventh. And I know Coughlin is not a great infielder, but he has played more third base than Jose of late. I'm wondering why you just don't have Bautista in right, Carrera in left, and Coughlin at third base. So I really have, until John Gibbons offers up a pregame explanation, which won't have happened yet because with the 1 hour later start with the Central Time Zone, the media won't have got him yet. I have absolutely no explanation that could make any sense, because I look at three names in there, you could shift their positioning around and it would be all the same.
Open speculation, maybe they're concerned Donaldson won't get back on track or will maybe suffer a setback down the road, and they're thinking, you know, we need someone to play third base permanently. Not suggesting that they would look to Bautista to be an everyday guy, but they already gambled with Martin there. Like, this isn't any crazier than Russell Martin starting at third base.
No.
Maybe like, it's creative.
A little less crazy.
I would say less, because Bautista has more history there than Russell Martin. And like, Russell Martin behind the plate clearly would be your highest priority.
Like, Brian, we found out on my show that Bautista was playing third before we saw the full lineup. And the automatic conclusion I drew from that was that they were going to throw Kendrys Morales out into the outfield so that they could have Morales and Smoke's bat, because Smoke's been unbelievable this year.
Mm-hmm.
I figured, okay, he's going to have Smoke at first, Morales in the outfield, Bautista at third. This I have no explanation for. Gibbons will have to give it. I would understand Smoke, Morales, Bautista at third. This I don't get.
Well, we'll see. Gibbons.
Do I got a second
to
ask him a question,
soon.
Scott? Yeah. What's the story with Encarnacion? What's happening there?
Well, he's a slow starter, typically. Now, Cleveland is not as hitter-friendly a ballpark as Rogers Center is here in Toronto. Edwin does typically get out of the gate slow. Usually by now, he's turned it around. So, I mean, we haven't heard anything about any injury or any situation like that. He's just, he's off to a rough start. And they got to hope he turns it around.
Well, still a lot of baseball. And Cleveland, they're probably not having the start they were hoping for, but I've got no concerns
about
that.
They're better than Minnesota.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, they'll figure it out. The Cubs will figure it out. Cleveland will figure it out. Boston's the one of the three that I'm not sure they're going to figure it out.
Well, and the other thing is you look at the division. If the Yankees or the Orioles are for real, that complicates things. The thing with the Cubs and with Cleveland is that the teams in front of them are very catchable, and they're not that far behind.
Scott MacArthur Show tomorrow at 1 p.m. Thanks for sticking around, buddy.
Great to be here. Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Man. We'll catch you tomorrow at 1. There's Scotty Mack. Rays coming up in the next hour. Sam Mitchell later in the afternoon. We'll catch up with Sam. Craig Button's in here for O-Dog and Noodles. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN 1050.